The Wake Up Call with Richard Martin, Mondays and Fridays at 10 a.m. on the Progressive Radio Network. Please be advised that the opinions and views expressed by Richard Martin of GF Investment Services, LLC, are entirely his own and do not necessarily represent the views of the company, its affiliates, or its officers. Investments based off of Richard Martin's comments are unsolicited by the company and are at the sole risk and prejudice of the listener and the investor.
Good morning, everybody. This is Richard Martin speaking to you from Singapore, halfway around the world, on this hopefully bright and sunny Monday morning. Of course, I have no idea what kind of weather you've got there, but certainly it's been splendid here, and it is Friday, January the 21st. So, without further ado, let's examine a very scary thought. The rate at which U.S. debt is growing is well beyond what it could repay, even if the economy were to start growing at 10% per year. Now, the reason for that is because the rate of U.S. debt growth in the last 3 years is well over that figure, and since 2002, the debt has more than doubled. Now, ladies and gentlemen, this is the mathematical certainty that is assiduously kept out of the press by accommodating editorial boards. Let's try to sift through the contradictory headlines and see if we can't discern something a little more reminiscent of reality. First off, the United States Federal Reserve, apparently a private corporation whose self-declared mandate is to be the, quote, central bank of the United States that provides the nation with a safe, flexible, and stable monetary and financial system, has been buying treasury bills, the source of U.S. monetary supply, at the rate of, on average, $75 billion a month. But that process has resulted in the Fed being exposed in no insignificant way to major losses from credit exposure. But Ben Bernanke, the Fed's embattled leader, suggested last week that the risks were minimal because, quote, if the liabilities of the Fed's balance sheet were to exceed its assets, it would only be so because of rising interest rates in the context of a thriving economy, end of quote. Excuse me? What kind of a pie-in-the-sky theoretical postulation is that? According to a recent Reuters article, and I quote, the Fed's newfangled policy steps and the potential for credit losses raises, for some experts, the prospect that the Treasury may actually be forced to recapitalize the Fed. Economists speak for what others might call a bailout, end of quote. Well, here's the bottom line. The Fed, which capitalizes the Treasury by buying Treasury bills, now needs to be recapitalized by the Treasury, who will now write checks to the Fed so it can continue to write checks to the Treasury. And this is no oversimplification. This is reality. The Fed is broke, and so is the Treasury. The ability of the Fed to stimulate the economy in such a condition does not exist. If the only way to inject capital into the asset-stimulating portion of the economy is to encumber the current account of the same economy with an exponentially greater quantity of debt, the result can only be, at some point, default. Well, somebody needs to stand up and admit that these two lines, credit growth and economic recovery, are permanently divergent. And the economist-generated stipulation that they can one day cross in a self-fulfilling prophetic law of delusional economic prophecy is preposterous. That, ladies and gentlemen, is one of the events that's pushing the U.S. towards financial annihilation. And that will be the primary catalyst in triggering the 2011 financial crisis. Well, both crude oil and food prices are at levels which, at the commodity spike of 2008, not desensitized us, would be considered dangerously unacceptable. Food and fuel prices are already causing social unrest in developing countries, where such staples can constitute a major portion of the consumer basket. But food and fuel are precisely the items excluded from the somnolent core CPI, meaning that U.S. authorities will be blind to the rising pressures on Americans who are barely subsisting. Near daily media stories, including one in Bloomberg the other day, indicate that whether rates rise or fall, whether the economy accelerates or slows, the oblivious Fed cartel has no intention of stopping its reckless QE2 purchases of treasuries using magic wand thin air pixie dust reserves. Alarmingly, the insane Bernanke has indicated his satisfaction that the flood of Ponzi quality liquidity is goosing stock prices. As John Hussman ably explains in his weekly column, high stock valuations today directly translate into weak prospective returns over the next decade. Pension plans succumbing to Bernanke's stock touting will get burned, just as surely as did home buyers who took Greenspan's ruinous advice to seek adjustable rate mortgages in 2004, just before short rates were hiked 4.25 percentage points. Greenspan, Bernanke, and most of their accomplices and co-conspirators maintain that bubbles can't be identified in real time and in any event aren't their problem. Wrong and wrong. This is bubble three right here, right now. Although it is still acquiring its defining focus, so far it has featured a generational high in bond prices, record highs in gold, food prices, and several commodity indexes, crude oil over $90 a barrel, and in stocks at valuations equivalent to those accompanying the 1929 and 1968 secular market peaks. Out-of-control food and fuel prices already are creating havoc. When bubble three pops, once again the economy will be mired for years in weak growth and surplus labor. This is the wholly predictable result of the excesses of bubble three, which the Federal Reserve central planners are feeding now. Given a Ponzi monopoly like John Law, these licensed fraudsters have acquired a messianic idée fixe that they can save the planet by expanding the scope of their depredations, which is, of course, the relentless grow-or-die logic imposed by a pyramid scheme. Bernanke is a menace to humanity. All right, ladies and gentlemen, let me give you my info before I forget. I am Richard Martin. This is the Wake Up Call. And as I said, it's coming to you live from Singapore and through the good offices of the company in New York. And if you want to call us and get some enlightenment on the current state of affairs, you may do so through our toll-free number, which is 888-874-4888. That's PRN's toll-free number again, 888-874-4888. If you would like to email me, you may certainly do so. I shall pick up my emails as they come in, hopefully, my email page being open permanently. And the email address to write to is RM, that's Richard Martin, at GFAWD for Global Financial Advisory Wealth Design, GFAWD.com. Once more, RM at GFAWD.com. If you'd like to call me in person to discuss your own personal economic financial affairs, you can do that on my direct line, which is through a toll-free number in Sarasota, Florida, and it is area code 941 441-1682. Once more, direct line through Sarasota, area code 941-441-1682. Remember that I am 13 hours ahead of you, so you may call me any time of the day or night, because your day is my night and my day is your night. So do feel free to call if I'm asleep or otherwise occupied. You will get my voicemail, and I will then call you back if you would be kind enough to leave a name and a phone number. Okay, well, consumer credit outstanding, $2.4 trillion. Mortgage debt outstanding, $10.6 trillion. Federal debt outstanding, $14 trillion. Commercial and multifamily mortgage debt outstanding, $3.2 trillion. Municipal bonds outstanding, $2.8 trillion. Corporate debt of non-financial companies outstanding, $7.4 trillion. Public pension underfunding, $2.5 trillion. Infrastructure investment needed, $2.2 trillion. U.S. fiscal gap, $202 trillion. All meaningless figures, ladies and gentlemen. Just as meaningless as if I was to say them all in one breath. Let's see if I can do that. Take a deep breath. Consumer credit outstanding, $2.4 trillion. Mortgage debt outstanding, $10.6 trillion. Federal debt outstanding, $14 trillion. Commercial multifamily mortgage debt outstanding, $3.2 trillion. Municipal bonds outstanding, $2.8 trillion. Corporate debt, non-financial companies outstanding, $7.4 trillion. Public pension and funding, $2.45 trillion. Infrastructure investment needed, $2.2 trillion. Not quite. But anyway, you see where I'm coming from. It's all just a bundle of words thrown together. It means absolutely nothing. And my wife, she often says to me when she's listening to the wake-up call, you know, I can't take in all these numbers. You give out too many numbers. It's just impossible for the average human to assimilate those numbers, digest them. And I always say to her, you know, yes, I realize that. I do understand. But the people have to know what it is they're up against. You have to know these things. I mean, I don't necessarily feel that it's incumbent upon anybody to, you know, give you a test of knowledge on these matters. But let it never be said that the figures never passed your ears. Because quite frankly, that is what the press wants to see. They want you not to know these things because, quite frankly, the powers that be will never pay them back. They will never reimburse. They are far, far too great for any organism within the universe to cope with. So it really doesn't make any difference to an understanding of the problem, does it? I mean, when you get to the point of $7 of borrowing to get $1 of income, which is what I guess I'm saying in a different way, you're obviously on an unsustainable path and pretty close to hitting the wall, which is more or less what we have here. We've reached a point of no return, ladies and gentlemen. And by the way, this isn't just me. This is David Stockman speaking, you know, Ronald Reagan's budget director. You know? We're talking about a Ponzi scheme that has ballooned since at least 1990. And that's if you don't want to go back to the mid-70s. But the thing really took off in 1990. It's beyond serious, and anybody who tells you there's a recovery, anybody who tells you that we're not in a depression, is utterly delusional. I mean, were they to be talking about something equivalent which you could understand through your daily life, you would clearly be afraid for their mental health. And any true self-respecting economist who hears those figures that I've read off to you will understand that the planet is doomed, and in particular the United States. There is no solution to this problem, ladies and gentlemen. Nothing can be done about this. Nothing. It cannot be solved. The only thing which can possibly happen is default, and default will happen, and it will happen very, very, very soon now. So I will be more and more in a mode of trying to sort of help you to cope with this. And what I mean by that is both on a financial level and on a social and an economic level. I mean, there's not much I can do for you. You know, we're talking, as always, about leaving the United States and going somewhere, preferably relatively poor, which you can get a vantage point on trying to make something grow out of a system which has already hit the skids, or preferably has not benefited from the frightful monetary expansion of the last 20, 25 years. Well, let me talk about something which is probably closer to home here. I've been getting an increasing number of questions, actually, about whether it's still safe to keep money in the bank or whether we should start putting it under the mattress. And as you know, my advice is still to keep money in short-term treasury bills, but I thought it might be time to say a quick word about how to store money and valuables at home, if that is your wish. Now, also, as you know, my view is that crime is going to soar in the United States over the next few years, so security in all respects is paramount. And as a rule of thumb, I think people should have readily available about 6 months' worth of cash for emergencies. And in addition, we all have important documents that we need to keep track of. Lots of us have some things that are particularly valuable or even priceless that we would never want to lose. And you do need to hide valuables somewhere. Now, storing these items can be tricky if we want to make sure that they aren't lost or stolen or confiscated. If you hire someone else to hold onto them for you, you add an extra layer of risk that they won't keep their promise. Euphemistically or otherwise. Old family photos are almost without value in a damage calculation in a lawsuit. Safe deposit boxes are a very unwise place to keep your valuables. They've been known to be raided and the contents sold due to nothing more than clerical errors and without informing the owners. Governments have also found ways to search and inspect them. Keeping valuables under the proverbial mattress or in some other easy hiding place in your house is not a good idea either. Visitors might stumble upon your stash, burglars can find it pretty easily, and even a search warrant could easily expose your hiding place. Some private vaults have a better reputation than most banks when it comes to anonymously and securely storing valuables. There are even some offshore options if you want better asset protection. But all these things have one drawback in common. You still have to trust a third party to honor the agreement to protect your stuff. Most vault companies will limit their liability in their storage agreement to hide valuables. There are some at-home options to hide valuables that involve third parties which you could explore. You could have a safe installed in your home. If you hire a contractor, you are taking the risk of sharing the existence and location of the safe with a third party, even if it is a hidden safe. If you go the cheap route and install a regular safe yourself, a burglar might find it, uninstall it, and crack it later at their undisturbed convenience. So here are some other ideas you might like to consider. hiding stuff in plain sight is actually a great way to throw off anyone who might be looking for your valuable documents or items. One of the most popular ways to hide valuables is using a book safe. They are easy and fun to make. If you have gone paperless and don't have many physical books anymore, you can use any object that you can mix in with others to hide your stuff. You could convert a box of cornflakes into a safe and stick it in your pantry. Make a few hollow Christmas decorations and stuff them full of your precious coins and a copy of your will and stick them in the huge box with all of the other Christmas decorations. In fact, your imagination is all that's needed on this one. Most homes are built with wood framing and drywall. This leaves a space of about 15 inches wide and 4 inches deep and a few feet high between wall studs and drywall. Poke a hole in the wall big enough to put your fireproof and waterproof container with your priceless artwork and gold nuggets in between the walls. Most people have the skills to follow a simple do-it-yourself book on how to fix the hole in the drywall. A patch kit, some plaster and paint will cost you very little. Just remember that you can't take these things in and out of the wall without breaking a new hole. If you doubt your wall patching ability, you might choose a spot where the hole will be covered by a large appliance or in some other spot where people won't easily find it. The more creative the spot to hide valuables, the less likely it will be for someone else to find it, if they even know it exists. If you're really handy, you might be able to build out a new wall to create more space or even a small room. Be careful whenever you are poking holes in the wall, because there might be wires, pipes, and other surprises waiting. If you're still not comfortable poking holes in your walls, you can pick up a shovel and play pirate with buried treasure. Use a solid waterproof container to hold your valuables and bury them in the yard somewhere. To make it easier to locate later, put a clear landmark on top of it, like a large rock, or plant a bush. You can easily integrate that into your regular landscaping plans. Be careful before you dig to check with the local authorities for any buried electrical, sewer, gas, or water lines. Hitting one of those with a shovel is not much fun. Certainly not as much fun as finding buried treasure. Protecting your stuff on your own property can be practical, but it has the added benefit of letting you use creativity. The more creative you get to hide valuables, the better it will probably be hidden. The only sad thing is that you can't show off your creativity and ingenuity to the neighbors. Don't worry, you'll survive. There's also a book called Secret Rooms, Secret Compartments by Jerry Zinzaletta. I won't bother to spell his name, but if you want to Google the book or put it into Amazon, it's called Secret Rooms, Secret Compartments. Well, it's still available and in print, and it's actually available right now for less than $20. It shows you how to think outside the box and create your own hidey hole based on your own situation. Oh, and by the way, don't forget to inform someone of your decision in case you die or, God forbid, go down with something like Alzheimer's. So there you go, ladies and gentlemen. That's the day's advice coming from Word to the Wise. Well, now I believe we have a caller. And that caller is Dave in Baltimore, who doesn't hear me talk about the NAFTA highway. Can you comment about the Amero currency? Dave, are you there?
Yeah, I'm with you. Thanks, Richard.
No problem. Let's hear what you have to say.
Well, you know, I've heard in relation to the breakdown of the economy and how you just said it's pretty much unsolvable, is that the, you know, the plan of the global managers, as Noam Chomsky would put it, to just do away with the economy so we can do away with the country and do away with the borders and create a new currency and go on from there? And also, too, I've heard Gerald Celente and Gary Noel say something about how Halliburton has completed, as of last year, 10 million empty jail cells around America. And I actually don't know where they are, but that's what I heard. And care to comment on any of that?
Well, the jail cells, that may be that may be something to think about. As far as this global conspiracy, giant conspiracy by all these, you know, moneyed interests, quite frankly, Dave, that is pie in the sky. As far as I'm concerned, it's complete and absolute, utter, total nonsense of the first order. I mean, in whose possible interest can it be to bring down the entire world? It just doesn't make sense. If these people were not already successful in their own right, if they weren't already multimillionaires, if they were kind of struggling with some kind of abstruse concept like Bernie Madoff to make money by sort of bringing people into penury through some kind of a scheme that they had hatched, yes, I'd go along with that. But we're talking about a global patent.
Well, no. I'm just saying, the global managers want to, you know, do something else with this country. You know what I mean? Like, open it up. And, well, what about the NAFTA highway that I hear is supposed to be, like, from Laredo up into Missouri and then up into Canada? And it's a half a mile wide with, you know, gas lines and railroad and all that. Do you know anything about that?
Yes, I've heard about that, and you know, I don't have hard and fast information. You know, I tend to gloss over stuff that I read about that kind of thing because I have no way of knowing whether it's true or not, and I have no way of knowing even if there's any other kind of ulterior motive. But it's very important, I think, to discount, you know, these kind of emotional people who are trying to make a name for themselves, are trying to keep themselves in the front lines the frontiers of thought, you know, by coming up with these incredible ideas. It doesn't make any sense to me.
Well, what do you do? If the predicament you just outlined a few minutes ago was essentially unsolvable, then where are we going from here, you know?
Well, I told, and you know, this is, I don't know how long you've been listening to the show, I am not in the business of offering governments advice. I'm not in the business of trying to, you know, right the wrongs of the world here, Dave. What I'm trying to do is to offer individual solutions to intractable problems. And, you know, I don't agree with the idea that you can make, you can take a stand by buying a gun, lots of food, water, and holding up in some, you know, mountain cave.
Oh, yeah, no, not at all.
Getting ready to shoot the enemy. What I'm saying is you need to leave the country. That is the only answer for me that responds to the problem, which is intractable. You cannot change it. You cannot solve it. You have to leave. That's my total approach to this. It is my absolute unwavering opinion that people in the United States are about to live through several decades of a hideous economic environment that will be so unpleasant and so impossible to dominate that it will only be after a short space of time that people will suddenly realize the mistake they made by staying around in the States. But that's my personal homemade solution,
right,
to people who are opening their eyes, are willing and able to see the truth. If you create excuses like Jemima lives in you know, Topeka, and I can't possibly leave the States because I've got to take care of her kids and the next door neighbor's cat. I mean, this kind of excuse just doesn't cut it any more than it cut anything for people who left other countries and emigrated to the United States. But
mm-hmm.
People never talk about those things. They never say, oh, yes, there was a time when people left other countries to come and live in our glorious and wonderful country called the United States of America. You don't hear that.
Right.
Because,
well, are there going to be areas, say, in the United States, like, let's say I live in Baltimore, and I'll tell you really quick, my personal situation is I own a house, and I only owe $19,000 on it. All right, now, I bought it 12 years ago for $110,000, and, you know, before all this started happening, it was worth about $300,000. Now, I mean, what would you suggest? And also, my wife works for the government. We are able, actually, to leave the country, you know, on like, 2 or 3 year contracts, just jump around, probably. But what do you suggest? I want to put a little bit of money in the house. I mean, I probably can't sell it. Should I just pay it off?
I think you should pay it off. Yes, absolutely.
Right. And then let me ask you another question, too. Is we have a friend, we took a mortgage, or not a mortgage, you know, a second, money. I can't remember what you call it. It's like a second mortgage. And we loaned a friend like $20,000, and he's only paid like $4,000 or $5,000, and he owes $16,000, and he lost his job. Here's a mortgage banker that lost his job, you know, a couple years ago. And I just want to know what the dangers are if this guy doesn't pay us. I mean, you know, if the level of the American dollar goes down, he owes us $16,000 on this loan, and he is making the interest payments. If I say to him, listen, we have to pay this off as soon as possible, what excuses can I give him that are, you know, legitimate that he really can't balk at, or doesn't really matter?
Well, it depends what your plans are. I mean, if you really intend to leave the country, you say, you know, you need to leave, you have to leave the country, you need the money because you're setting up elsewhere, and you need the money to create a new life for yourself in some other place. I think the chances you're going to see your money are slim.
Yeah, right, exactly. Well, I'll have to take, sell the loan to Fat Tony or something, you know, or take his piano. But
I mean, yeah, the best way you can go is to try to appeal to his sense of fairness in as much as you really need that money. If he suspects you don't need the money, he's not even going to think about paying you back.
Okay, well, what is the danger right now of having an outstanding loan on a house or an equity? Or not equity, I can't remember what they call it. A line of credit, you know, say you have, I mean, is it really important to try to pay those down? And if you don't, what does that mean in the future economy?
Well, I mean, that you could be foreclosed. So, do you mean if you don't pay, down the mortgage? Is that what you're saying?
Well, I mean, right. I mean, money's not a problem right now in this house. Okay, it probably sees about $230,000 annually. All right, now that's going to go down. The value of the dollar is going to go down and everything. But what I'm saying is that for any reason, we should hurry up and pay off these loans before, you know, the proverbial stuff.
Well, you want to pay off the loan simply because you don't want to be paying interest on money that apparently you were able to pay off. So why give fat bankers money, to feather their nest, when in fact you could easily feather yours with your own money, pay it all off, and then say goodbye to the bankers.
Right.
But I mean, I really think that you also ought to consider selling that house for whatever you can get. I mean, I do think that prices are going to go further down in housing, and that and I used to say this years and years ago. I haven't, given this advice very frequently in recent years, but people should sell property they don't want, they don't need, and they'd rather be without. I think they should sell it. Don't try to rent it. Don't try to, get cute with it with, reverse mortgages and stuff like that. Just get rid of it. And, so in order to do that, obviously, you need the money. You need the money to pay it down.
Mm-hmm.
It's another reason why you would want your money. And then just turn around and sell it as quickly as you can. But my advice remains the same. Out of the country. That's what you need to do. Get out of the country. You need to leave and find somewhere. You have exactly the same kind of reasons for leaving the States today that people had, 100, 200 years ago for leaving their countries and coming to the States.
Well, other places, though, that are going to be fairly safe. I mean, Baltimore, I live right across the street from the baseball stadium. I mean, it's all where the harbor is. It's really nice down here. I mean, they're going to make these little green zones so these little gang members can't come down here. Or we're talking about something else, too, about, the garbage not being collected and all that.
We're not talking about gang members. We're talking about hordes of... look, Dave, we're not talking about gang members here. We're talking about hordes of people out of work, destitute, whose 99 weeks have run out. What do you want them to do when they see somebody walking down the road that they think might have a few dollars that could be theirs just by, taking it from them?
Right.
I mean, we're going to get to that situation. We're already, to some degree, in that situation in certain urban areas of the United States. It's going to get much, much worse. So forget about all the little fancy green areas. You're dealing with people who are desperate.
Mm-hmm.
And as Gerald Celente says, when people have lost everything, they lose it.
Right, exactly.
And that's what you're dealing with, and that's what you don't want to have to live through in your life. Living once, as they say, you need to try to make it as pleasant as possible. And that's why I think that you need to start again. I mean, you're talking to somebody who's done that. I've lived in the United States for 22 years. I've moved out. Couldn't be happier, So,
you're the only one, though, I hear. Well, I also made four or five programs on the station, and you're the only one that's really regularly saying, move out. And even Gary remains optimistic. I mean, what can he be thinking? You know, if he's also...
Listen, people need optimism in their lives. They need to see things getting better. I mean, you know, suicide comes from people who have lost all sense of optimism. They've got nothing to live for. Then, you know, why not just end it all? You know, I mean, George Carlin has some hilarious takes on that kind of aspect of life if you ever listen to some of his HBO specials.
Who would you say?
Reality, George Carlin.
Oh, yeah. Oh, well, one really quick thing before. What about, I heard another show here said something about Interpol maybe bringing some arrest warrants to like 750 people, you know, in the international banking cartels if they go ahead with this investigation. Have you heard anything about that?
Nope. Interpol. No, I don't know anything about that. Sorry, I must have missed the news on that one.
All right. Well, thanks for your advice. I've been listening for about a year now, and you're good. Thanks. I really appreciate it.
All right. Well, keep on listening, and you know what to do.
Okay. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
Thanks so much. Take care. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we're a little bit over time here. We need to take a break, and I shall be right back.
You're listening to PRN, Progressive Radio Network.
Hello, this is Eric Ofner, your host of the best jazz show on the air on Progressive Radio Network, Eric's Sounds of Jazz. Every Friday night at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, I play the best jazz ever recorded by Louis, Sidney, Bessie, Billy, and all the others. Remember, Progressive Radio Network, Eric's Sounds of Jazz, every Friday night, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
To City's Grace Notes, where we'll be bringing you inspired voices from around the world, creative voices from various fields and backgrounds, new sounds, new music, and new ideas with your host, CD, every Tuesday at 7 p.m. on Progressive Radio Network.
This is Glenn Ford. Join me and co-host Nellie Bailey every Monday at 5 p.m. Eastern Time for Black Agenda Radio, an hour of news, analysis, and commentary from a black left perspective. That's Black Agenda Radio on the Progressive Radio Network.
This is Peter Roth, the host of Energy Stew, which airs on Thursday nights at 8 p.m. My show interviews fascinating authors, inventors, and researchers of new understandings, techniques, and discoveries that can enhance and transform our lives. What is our potential and how can we fulfill it to the max? To find out, tune in to Energy Stew and Peter Roth at 8 p.m. Thursdays on Progressive Radio Network.
This is Adam Kolker from the Brooklyn Jazz Underground. We're going to be hosting a weekly show every Tuesday at 5 p.m., focusing on sounds coming from the borough of Brooklyn. We'll be playing some new releases, doing live interviews, some live performances, maybe even venture out into music from some of the outer boroughs. Brooklyn Jazz Underground, Tuesday at 5, only on the Progressive Radio Network.
You are listening to PRN, Progressive Radio Network.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, we're back. And I thought I would talk for a few minutes about the perils of small business and what it's like with business in America today. I'm sure you've all heard stories of immigrants arriving penniless on the shores of the United States and within years had created fantastic businesses worth millions, all by dint of their own hard work, business acumen, and not a small helping of luck to go along with it. Do you realize that this would be almost impossible today? The very lifeblood upon which the United States' reputation was founded is totally unrealistic today? Well, for those of you who have decided that you are going to attempt to start a business in America, and are still convinced that it is the land of opportunity and that starting a business is fairly easy, have you considered all the headaches involved? Are you sure that you are ready to handle the thousands of regulations that apply to your business and the mountains of paperwork mandated by various levels of government? Are you prepared to deal with entrenched unions, predatory lawyers, and rabid environmentalists? The truth is that the business environment has never been this toxic in all of U.S. history. So even if you are able to start a viable business that can compete with the monolithic global corporations that dominate the economy, you still might not be able to make it. In the end, thousands upon thousands of businesses across America have been doomed to failure by ridiculous regulations, mountains of paperwork, health insurance costs, predatory lawsuits, or corrupt government officials. So let me talk a little about the odds you are going to be up against. Historically, as I said, small businesses have been the driving force behind America's economic growth. But today, the business environment has been made so complicated that small business owners are being completely overwhelmed by red tape. And any of you who are small business owners know exactly what I'm talking about. So here are a few areas that anyone wishing to start a small business had better think about before moving forward. When you really stop and think about it, the fact that anyone out there is still attempting to start small businesses in America today is absolutely mind-boggling. How about regulations? If you plan to start a business in America today, you'd better get hold of a good lawyer. In fact, if you want to feel safe, you'd better get a small army of lawyers. You're going to need an expert in the federal regulations that apply to your business. You're going to need an expert on the state regulations that apply to your business. You're going to need an expert on the local regulations that apply to your business. There are going to be literally thousands of regulations that apply to any business started inside the United States today. There is no way you will ever be able to learn them all. Not only that, but the reality is that your lawyers will only be aware of a small fraction of them. Do you know what the Federal Register is? The Federal Register is the primary source of regulations for U.S. government agencies. In 1936, the number of pages in the Federal Register was about 2,600. Today, the Federal Register is over 80,000 pages long. That's just one example of how bad things have got. So what do you do? Well, just do your best to try to learn about the major regulations that apply to your business and pray that you don't end up violating some important regulation that you're not even aware of. Do you know what paperwork the federal government expects you to fill out? Do you know what paperwork the state government expects you to fill out? Do you know what paperwork the city or the county expects you to fill out? Do you know what paperwork you will be required to fill out when hiring a new employee? The paperwork burden on small businesses has multiplied in recent years. Many small businesses, the owners, are so swamped with paperwork that they barely have time to conduct their actual businesses. For example, the U.S. Food and Drug Administration is projecting that the food service industry will have to spend an additional 14 million hours every single year just to comply with a new federal regulation that mandates that all vending machine operators and chain restaurants must label all products that they sell with a calorie count in a location visible to the consumer. 14 million hours just to comply with one ridiculous regulation? Yes, that's how bizarre things have got in America in 2011. Oh, and don't forget the fees and fines. Many small business creators in America are absolutely horrified to learn of the fees and fines that they must pay before they can ever even open their doors. Much of the time, it is revenue-starved local governments that are the biggest culprits. For example, I came across this horror story, which I will share with you. Started a new business this year in Arizona, paid over $10,000 in fees for permitting, $10,000 in fees for electric hookup, $10,000 in fees for gas hookup, and an extra $200 fee a month just for the privilege of having gas. Adding up all the fees to start our business, I don't think we would do it again. We're now just getting to the point we are making our bills each month, and so we're not taking a paycheck and don't anticipate one for at least another year. Our family has been in business for ourselves for decades, and we know what we're doing. But the rising fees caught us off guard. Cities, municipalities, counties, and states are all raising fees at astronomical rates to help offset the slump in their real estate income, since banks apparently don't have to pay real estate taxes. I'm telling you, every business person I know is on their last leg. Now, that's the end of that quote. Then, of course, there are the taxes. The United States has one of the most repressive business taxation schemes in the world, maybe the most repressive of all. As a small business owner, do you know what taxes you will be expected to pay? It's not just federal income taxes and state income taxes that you'll be paying. Just to make you feel really good, why don't I quickly run through the taxes which your friendly government is just itching to lay on you? In alphabetical order, of course. I wouldn't want you to think that any one tax is more important than any other. They all have to be paid. Accounts receivable taxes, building permit taxes, capital gains taxes, CDL license taxes, corporate taxes, corporate income taxes, court fines, indirect taxes, dog license taxes, federal income taxes, federal unemployment taxes, fishing license taxes, food license taxes, fuel permit license taxes, gasoline taxes, gift taxes, hunting license taxes, inheritance taxes, inventory tax, IRS interest tax, tax on top of tax, of course, IRS penalties, tax on top of tax, liquor taxes, local income taxes, luxury taxes, marriage taxes, Medicare taxes, payroll taxes, property taxes, real estate taxes, recreational vehicle taxes, road toll booth taxes, road usage taxes, truckers, sales taxes, self-employment taxes, school taxes, septic permit tax, service charge taxes, social security taxes, state income taxes, state unemployment taxes, telephone federal excise taxes, telephone federal universal service fees taxes, telephone federal state and local surcharge taxes, telephone minimum usage surcharge taxes, telephone recurring and non-recurring charge taxes, telephone state and toll local taxes, telephone usage charge taxes, toll bridge taxes, toll tunnel taxes, traffic fines, another indirect taxation, trailer registration taxes, utility taxes, vehicle license registration taxes, vehicle sales taxes, watercraft registration taxes, well permit taxes, worker compensation taxes. That was fun, wasn't it? But we're not done yet. How about your health insurance crying out for your attention? Do you know if you will be required to provide health insurance for your new employees? Have you familiarized yourself with the new 2,409-page health care law? Enough to be able to set up a health insurance program? As a result of the new health care law, health insurance premiums for employees are shooting through the roof. Are you going to be able to afford them? Would it be better to have fewer employees and work each of them harder so that you won't have to provide health coverage for as many people? Will you be able to compete with the companies in your industry that have received waivers from having to comply with the new health care law? In the United States, the system places the burden of providing health care onto the backs of employers, so are you ready to handle that burden? Will the employers of your new business need pensions? Do you know how to set up a 401k program? Do you know what defined benefit plans are? You can literally sit through an entire law school course on pension law and still understand virtually nothing about the subject. The truth is that if you plan to provide your employees with some kind of pension program, you'd better hire someone who can at least pretend that they know what they're talking about and set it up for you. If you are creating a small business that does manufacturing, you're going to have to deal with foreign competition. So, are you going to be able to compete with the companies in your industry that pay their workers on the other side of the world less than a tenth of what you are paying to your American workers? In these other utopian lands, companies often don't have to worry about unions, workers' comp, health benefits, retirement benefits, nightmarish environmental regulations, crushing taxes, or miles of paperwork and red tape. Are you certain you can compete against that? And then you see, of course, the more successful you become, the more inviting a target you are going to be for predatory lawsuits. Unless you've been living under a rock, you will know by now that the courtrooms of America are packed with thousands of lawsuits, many of them utterly frivolous, and that the lawyers that bring them are hardly ever held accountable. All of your hard work can go down the drain in a single moment. There are hordes of lawyers out there making a living by filing lawsuits against small to mid-sized businesses. The pathetic reality is that if you are running a small business, you are probably doing something wrong. Just hope and pray that a predatory lawyer doesn't find out. Protecting the environment is obviously a good thing. Unfortunately, there are many radical environmentalist groups that consider it to be a bad thing that humans even breathe because it produces carbon dioxide. When Audi ran their now famous Green Police commercial during the Super Bowl last year, most Americans laughed it off and thought that nothing like that could ever happen in America. Well, it turns out that it is happening in America. Not only are government environmental regulations totally nightmarish at this point, but there are a growing number of radical environmentalist groups that are running around the country filing lawsuits against whoever they feel like. And now we come to the federal government, probably your biggest enemy in the fight to set up a small business. You will have to be prepared for a federal government that can literally change all the rules at any time. Many businesses across America are frozen in their tracks at this point because they don't know what Obama and the U.S. Congress are going to do next. Things are getting really bizarre in America. For example, federal agents recently raided an Amish farm at 5 a.m. in the morning because they were selling unauthorized raw milk. If federal agents will raid an Amish farmer at 5 a.m. in the morning over some raw milk, do you think that they're going to have any mercy on your small business when your turn comes? Ladies and gentlemen, it's time to face up to the facts. The America that once embraced free enterprise and the entrepreneurial spirit is dead and gone. Now the U.S. is a country filled with bureaucrats and red tape from sea to shining sea. Is it any wonder that it can't compete with the rest of the world? Is it any wonder why so many millions of Americans are unemployed and can't find jobs? In an attempt to solve the country's problems, they just keep passing more reform, which means even more rules and regulations for America's businesses to follow. Just as they're doing on an individual level, the government is attempting to watch, track, and control everything that businesses are doing. Everywhere you look in American society today, the government is gradually tightening the steel-fisted grip that it has around everyone and everything. Pretty soon you won't even be able to sneeze without the government telling you how to do it correctly. Is that really the kind of society you want to live in? Are you surprised, Dave and others, that I am constantly exhorting you to leave the country and try your luck somewhere else? It really isn't going to make a difference what kind of little corner in the United States you decide to go to. You're going to be hounded down, tracked, and made to play their game. It certainly isn't yours. All right, well, while we're on the subject of relocating, here's a couple of anecdotes from anonymous correspondents. One in Thailand. Here in Thailand, relatively extensive health insurance for my wife and I costs about $1,550 a year. Many told me I'm crazy to pay it, since healthcare is so cheap just to buy. Indeed, I pay for visits to the clinic out of pocket. The last trip was for a bite by a red ant down on the farm, which I was foolish enough to scratch. Cost of the visit, including antibiotics and an ointment, $8. A good many people here do insure themselves out of pocket. My policy does cover full-blown cancer treatment. What does that cost? At most, I'm told it would run about $16,000 to $17,000 at the current exchange rates. A private room would run you around $50 to $60 a day. Hospitals here generally will not do transplants. Violates cultural taboos, so I'll be out of luck should I need one of those. Oh, and the USA is singled out as a country where the policy isn't valid. I can live with that. Extensive treatments are affordable here. Bangkok tends to be more expensive than elsewhere. The care is also quite good. Oh yes, I suppose they do take credit cards. Thailand will give you a 30-day visa when you show up at the airport. Lots of other foreign countries also offer affordable quality health care, or at least much more affordable than in the United States. Australia, for example, not an ideal option, of course, but it may help to see you through. As for me, I couldn't be happier than the health care I have here and the price. Medical care in the USA is just through and through a racket, facilitated by its politicians. Well, another one. I was talking to a young fellow, a friend of my daughter, who incidentally is in the building trades and currently underemployed. I advised him to get out of this country. He's almost 30. He's uninsured. I told him if I was his age, I would be moving to a European country or even across the river to Canada. The only reason I don't do it myself now is because my entire family is here, brother, sister, daughters, ignore my grandbabies and great-grandbaby. This country is so far behind the Canadians and Europeans that it will take a generation at least to become a civilized nation again. Oh dear, oh dear, oh dear, we are in trouble, aren't we? Well, what else can I say? All right, I think I've got a couple of emails here that I might just quickly move into. One from Bill Adamo. Richard, do you think the people running the banks and the bank regulatory folks are serving at the whim of the president or the other way around? I think the people running the banks and the banking regulatory folks are just having a good time and making hay while the sun shines, Bill. I don't think they're serving at anybody's whim, really. I think they're just doing it because they can. Whether it all ends, you know, in a rush, I don't know how it will all end, but end I know it will. And in the way these people are behaving, and the fact that they're all getting more jobs in the administration along with the departure of Volcker, is a very sad statement of the way things are right now, and it's not going to get any better, obviously, for the next 2 years, and probably after that too. It's a hellish environment, quite frankly. Okay, Al Berry wrote in saying, what countries have a strong, booming economy? Well, may I introduce you to a tiny little country not a million miles away from where I'm sitting here, called Singapore. 14.7% growth last year, Al. Don't think it'll see anything like that this year, but Asia is the name of the game here. So far, they've made a tremendous amount of money in the last few years, making cheap goods, which they're able to send out to countries that have the kind of business environment that I just spent 20 minutes describing to you in the United States. I would call Asia a country. It is an area of the world, but pretty much anywhere here is going to fit that bill, Al. Okay, so then we have Steve Pinero, who says, hi, Richard. Is keeping money at a broker a good option for apartment dwellers? My landlord can and has entered my apartment on short notice. You've mentioned that brokers have to keep your money separate when not invested. Yes, that is an excellent idea. I would definitely say keep your money with a broker rather than a bank. Furthermore, if you have to keep it on short notice, keep it in treasury bills, but the money is insured. The question really is, at the moment, although the question may change, but the question is right now, how long does it take to get your money back? And that is the problem here. It could take, if brokers are really in trouble and they have to come out with money, it might take them longer to get you your money than otherwise. But I don't see a problem with brokers, not at all. Not if they're reputable brokers. They are also insured, as you know, and so you should be fine with brokers. And finally, Al Berry again comes in. Dear Richard, is the stock market doing well because companies on the stock market are doing business outside the United States? Thank you, Al Berry. In part, that is true. In part, also, there is a tremendous amount of speculation. But the main reason why the stock market is doing well, Al, is because of the odious Bernanke throwing money into the system, basically not itself going into the market, but simply giving people the feeling that this can just go on and on and on. It can't and it won't, and they're wrong to think that, and they're wrong to use the QE2 as the excuse. But, you know, as we say in my business, perception is reality, and until that changes, we just need to be patient and wait. And when it does change, I assure you the downfall will be absolute and definitive. So do bear that in mind. But companies, obviously, outside the States are repatriating money with a cheaper dollar, which helps. They're also able to pay lower wages. So there are all sorts of unseen advantages, which are certainly helping corporate profits. But they're not really helping the economy of the United States, as I'm sure you know very well, Al. So that's your question. I'm not sure if I have any others. I don't suppose I have much time if I do. But nevertheless, I'm going to suggest that time is running out. I hope you have enjoyed the show. I've tried to cover a lot of material in a short space of time, but of course there is so much to talk about that I feel sometimes I have to rush through this. But I do welcome your questions, ladies and gentlemen. As I say, if you do feel like calling in, I'd love to hear from you, and very much appreciate the caller that we did have today, and that was Dave. So please feel free, call in. I will do what I can to assist you with some responses. So with that, I am going to wrap it up and say thank you to all of you for listening, and I hope you all have a wonderful weekend, and I shall be back with you bright and early, 10 a.m. on Monday. As always, this is Richard Martin at The Wake Up Call saying bye-bye till then.